Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my goodness, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Studio G in Greenville, South Carolina, Des Moines, Iowa, the world capital of, yep. And tonight we got a special guest from Studio I, Indianapolis, Indiana. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the one and only Charlotte Lyon, the greatest racing fan podcast in the world. And if you don't believe me, give me a call, 843-655-8775, and I'll confirm. This is Dr. John, and I'm so glad to be here tonight. We were postponed a little bit, like everything. Sometimes things aren't perfect in this coronavirus world, but I'm glad to be here with my buddies. And so, first of all, I got to check in with the hosts. Studio G, who's there?
Oh, that's me. I'm here.
Who are you?
I'm still Zach. That's right. I got a
you're
name.
Still Zach. Okay,
that.
That's great. You're not just Zach. You're still Zach. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you here. From Des Moines, Iowa, the world capital of racing in the Midwest. Is that correct?
I don't know about capital in the Midwest. I feel like Indianapolis might have something to say about that. But we'll take world capital of corn.
I was about to say.
Are you talking about my humor, Brady? Come on.
Oh, I mean, always talk about your humor, John. But no, we're doing good up here in Des Moines. We're finally starting to get some decent days up here. I got a NASCAR race going on in my my home office here because NBC is rebroadcasting the 2017 Talladega 500. So I really can't complain with my setup tonight.
Oh my goodness, this is the only truth to ever come out of NBC. Oh, okay. Ooh, that's a tough statement.
Ooh.
Anyway, woo. That's Ric Flair. That's what Rick would say. Woo! Anyway, tonight we've got, again, more racing retro action with commentary from two of the greatest racing commentators in the world that I know, Zach and Brady. But we have a special guest tonight, speaking of Indianapolis, from Studio I for Pop Culture Stars. This is a gentleman that I've known forever. He's a great guy. He's one of my favorite people in the world. This is Todd Saxon. Todd, how are you doing tonight?
I am outstanding to supernatural and ecstatic to be here on
All right.
Charlotte Lyon.
All right, guys. Now you know why I had him there, because he said it was supernatural. And I host so many supernatural podcasts. But the reason we've got Todd here is we have this thing that is on hiatus. I hate that word. It means you just wonder what hiatus really means, but it means it's kind of on hold. The Fantasy Racing League for the Charlotte Lyon is on hold right now because the NASCAR Cup Series schedule is on hold. But before all that happened, the leader of the pack was Todd. Now, I am going to turn the questioning. I feel like I'm running What's My Line or something, but I'm turning the questioning over to Todd, followed by Brady. You've got to talk to this guy, get inside of his head. Well, I don't know if you want to get inside of it, or at least get near it and see how he could be number one and not me. And nobody laughed at that. Come on. Okay.
Well, the numbers speak for themselves on that one.
I mean, definitely on that. But Todd, honestly, he brings up a good point. You've definitely kind of come out of nowhere, really had good, solid picks all season long. Kind of talk us through what your thought process were. Did you do any research, or just kind of go with that gut feeling this season?
Honestly, a combination of both. And really, the worst call I made is when I went against the gut feeling, is when I went against logic. And just for the record, for all of you, if you follow Dr. John's advice and you want to get inside my head, please be sure which voice inside my head you want to talk to. Because you will likely get some bloody different answers. I've been away from NASCAR for about a decade. A lot of my cats ain't there. Oh my God, Jimmy Johnson was still pretty much freaking young last time I was anything close to consistent watching it and enjoying it. I had done two or three seasons of NASCAR Fantasy prior to that. I don't remember if it was, you know, who was the league operator, you know, like Yahoo or whatever. You know, trying to work with their rules. I'd been away, but I knew, so I come back and some of the young guns that were cats that were doing stuff are not even there. So I've got like, you know, I've got young guns that are graybeards and I've got young guns that are gone. Like, who was the dude that did the backflips from the vehicle?
Oh, Carl Edwards.
Carl Edwards. Yep.
Gone.
Yeah, and his was an abrupt departure, too.
Yeah, right? Okay, and that, you know, and I knew I had heard about that before, and because I wasn't following, I don't think it, like, registered as well as it should have. I was aware of it, but it was like I had to dig deeper in the memory to realize that stuff. So I really had to, take some time and do some stuff. And, and I went back and I did fairly solid 3 years. And I did some more random 5-year back searches just to get a better feel, a vibe for what was now. And you guys squared me away because you guys were on Pop Culture Stars for one of our shows, and it was like, that whole car tomorrow is not exactly what they're using today. Correct?
Right.
So, you know, that was like the last thing I saw, so it's been a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I use some, you want to know the secret? I ain't stinking telling you.
Fair enough.
I use some other stuff, and I didn't just guess. I did, I found some decent bases for research that are no stretch of anybody with reasonable cognizance and sagacity to try to get some insight. I read a few articles and I watch different trends. You know, you watch your vehicle companies that are rocking and rolling. You watch your teams that are rocking and rolling, all that kind of stuff. Obviously, you watch your drivers. Histories on the track, stuff like that.
Always.
And
that's
what I do. And generally, I try to use logic. And I try to avoid the gut. And again, when I went with the gut, it backfired on me. But, that was my worst week, but that's the way it goes.
The way it goes sometimes. And, you know, I was on Pop Culture Stars a few weeks ago, and you and I were kind of talking about, you know, the NASCAR that you grew up with and kind of that turn of the 2010s, later 2000s, where it kind of fell off the map and really wasn't the same. But kind of talk to me about, like, the racing action you've seen so far in 2020, like the different rule changes with stage breaks, the different aero packages, trying to keep the cars as close as possible, and compared with the on-track, you know, product that we're seeing these days compared to what days when you were growing up watching NASCAR and tuning in every week, do you kind of like some of the changes? Do you like how close the competition's kind of, you know, getting these days? Kind of tell me a little bit about that kind of a difference, you know, looking back in almost an introspective kind of way.
Oh, okay. I think, and we had talked about how safety being paramount was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because at the time they didn't know how to make the safety aspect allow the competition level to stay it was. It was like it really put the brakes on things. So now they've added a bunch of little rules to keep things much more even. I do not know that it is more predictable than it was. I mean, you know, when I was doing it, you know, Tony Stewart was still racing, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's been a minute.
right.
I'm watching some of the stuff, and I'm watching, you know, there's guys that don't have a big name, but because everybody's operating on a lot of the rules have evened stuff out, in my opinion, now. There's guys that there was, what was it, second or third race of the season, there was a guy that was like from a team that has jack inconsistency and stuff like that, and he won.
Yeah. I think that was your I believe that was third race. That would have been, goodness gracious, I'm already starting to lose track of who all won this year.
Alex Bowman at Auto Club.
Yeah, there we go.
And that, I don't know, that would have been in every five-year anomaly previously, where now I'm thinking this might happen 3, 4, 5, 6 times a season now. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense, and it's definitely a trend we've seen throughout the lighter part of the 2010s. It's exactly what you were alluding to. NASCAR's definitely made it to where, you know, a mistake like that, where back in the 90s and 80s could have been a complete race ruiner. You could have been 3 laps down with no way to recover. But with little changes that you were alluding to, things like the lucky dog, the wave around rule, stage breaks, they're all little tiny things that have kind of made it to where drivers, you know, get maybe a mulligan, for a lack of a better term, to kind of, you know, give them a chance to overcome some of these issues that might pop up in any given race. Because when you're dealing with these cars going these astronomical speeds, you know, inches off the wall, inches off your competitor, the slightest miscue could completely trash one of the fastest cars in the field and ruin someone who should have won that race's day. But like you said, now there's a little rules in place that make it so if you make a mistake early on the race, you still have opportunities to, you know, correct that mistake and get your ship kind of righted, as it were. So, but that's a really good introspective on that. The other thing I kind of wanted to pick your brain on, as far as like the actual production of the race itself, growing up throughout the 70s and 80s, you know, the idea of stage breaks was kind of a novelty idea, say, for like the Winston or the Clash race. So growing up as a fan, you know, of the traditional NASCAR, how do you feel about the stages in particular and how they're breaking up the race, you know, giving points throughout the middle of the race, so if you end up crashing at the end, you still salvage a good points day? Kind of what are your thoughts on that as a new direction and a way to kind of incentivize running well throughout the event as opposed to just kind of making a late charge?
Okay, I have a couple minds on this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. Are you familiar with track and field where you run the relay race?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got, you put together a team, and your different runners. You, when you build those, you're like, generically, they want to put some of their hottest stuff on the first and last leg.
Right.
And that's trying to run that. If in that quarter that the first leg of, let's say, a four-member team does something, if in the first quarter a guy breaks a world record, but the rest of his teammates fail, it means nothing, right?
Right.
Because they didn't come in the, you know, first, second, third type thing. So you look at Now this dude that got that world record in the first quarter is getting some credit. But does it mean now it's a participation trophy?
And so, you know, honestly, that's kind of where I'm at too.
Man, thank you for, like, let me know I wasn't completely insane in viewing that, because, dude, if the dude freaking just kicked ass in that, it's like that cat don't get any credit because the rest of the team failed him and all that. And it's just, and let's face it, there are certain tracks where you have those pack issues that it's freaking insane. What was it? Was it the second race of the year with that wreck that was insane?
The 500, actually, the very first race.
Okay. Yeah. It's just, I mean, look, that was a season-changing freaking event.
Right. And kind of building off your point about the participation trophy, the one thing that's bugged me about the stage system since they introduced it back in 2017 that I went back and forth on, because like you, I like that it still rewards a guy who's had a good day that maybe just didn't get the finish that he deserved, you know, as far as like the overall like goal of trying to win the Cup Series title, the Bill France Cup, you know, from that perspective, especially, you know, having drivers that I actively cheer for, drivers that I root for every Sunday, when it's one of my drivers affected by a random occurrence or a part failure when they've had the dominant car, I like it when stage points award my driver, you know, those little extra points to help
the
championship bid. But on the same token, I'm a statistics guy, and I like looking at things like wins, top fives, and top tens. And with the stages, I feel like the stage points that you get and the stage wins kind of overshadow top fives and top tens, and top fives and top tens really don't mean the same anymore. And so from, you know, a historical kind of statistician's standpoint, that really bugs me. And it's been 3 years later, four seasons almost now, and I still can't get past that. It's that little thing that bugs me every time I think of the stage system. So I'm definitely torn. And it was interesting to get your perspective on that, because I really want to talk to more fans that have kind of, you know, seen the sport evolve from the traditional, you know, grassroots kind of tally it down, you know, and then getting a little more efficient and then going through the whole chase, differing ways that they're going to change the format, how we're going to choose the title. So it was really interesting to get your perspective on that, Todd.
Yeah, because it's not how you start, it's how you finish, all these different things. It's but by the same token, man, when you see, and we've all had it in our lives, we've all tried to do different things. I don't care if it's old school, going back when everything was manual windows and that, trying to fix the damn belt to roll up your window, and you had some bad luck. You know, you had $5, you bought your own damn belt, you went in there and you broke it when you're trying to repair it, and you're like, son of a bitch, and it's going to rain tonight. You know,
always worked out.
None of us want to be that's got the doggone trash bag over the window and some doggone duct tape stuff like that. But by the same token, because we've been there, we know it was just some damn bad luck.
Right.
So I had those mixed emotions and all that. But, you know, it's how you finish. It's how you finish. It's, I hope I'm not going in the wrong tangent here, but, you know, those things we do in life.
Not you, Todd. Not you, Todd. You never go on any tangents. Please continue.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I know.
Right.
I know. But it's, you know, in life and what we do, it's not, in my mind, it's not the dollars in the bank, stuff like that. It's when we pass, I want to know I have more repeat. I want to know I have more people that say I'm going to miss that SOB than I have more people that say I want to piss or spit on his grave.
Fair enough.
Now you're talking about my horror films that I like. I will spit on your grave. Come on, man.
Get an age-old curse from that one right there. Get the Talladega curse on you. One thing I really wanted to ask you, Todd, is you kind of touched on it a little bit. You talked about how when you were watching about a decade ago, there was a whole different crew of faces, you know, dominating the sport, leading the charge, being the guard, you know, the veteran drivers, the new up-and-coming drivers trying to take the veterans down. And now a lot of those faces are gone, especially the young guns. I can think of Casey Kane, Dale Jr., Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, all those drivers that dominated the headlines in the late 90s, early 2000s, they're all gone. So my question for you, having left the sport and now kind of coming back, you know, participating with us and watching the races and doing the fantasy, are there any of these young drivers that are kind of standing out like, man, you know, I might have to root for them more than just, hey, hopefully you bring me home some points. Are any drivers kind of making a case to be your new favorite driver?
I've been trying to avoid trying to do any of that. Like, I'm watching Jimmy Johnson trying to do his last year through, you know, theoretically last year routine and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying not to get too nostalgic there. But one of the things I've been kind of watching is just an interesting is NASCAR has a great generational thing going on. You know, so we've got I'm trying to bring some humor in here without trying to make it seem too bad. But the, you know, we've got some second, third, and there might be a fourth generation driver in there or so. And so I'm watching them with, like, unique interest more than rooting for, if that makes any sense.
Hmm. Oh, I get that. And that's what's been really neat about this generation of drivers and their access to social media is you can see more of their personalities out from aside from the wheel, what they do behind the wheel. You know, you can see more of their hobbies. Like, I can think if Dale Earnhardt were around when, you know, TikTok or Instagram were around, we probably would have got a bunch of hunting videos because Dale, being the savvy guy he was, he would have been right in front of the social media bandwagon trying to market it to the best of his ability. So the fact that we, you know, get these windows into these drivers' lives, you know, we can see them on iRacing. I can see Ryan Blaney, you know, geeking out over Star Wars. I'm like, hey, I like me some Star Wars. This guy's pretty cool, you know. So I kind of like that perspective. It's interesting you bring that up.
Oh, and that, and like you brought a whole nother facet into that because when you go, I won't tell you how old I am. We're going to leave that one the hell's alone. The,
well, it's over 400 last time I heard. I'll shut up.
John over here, I've got jokes.
Just because my high school diploma is painted on a cave wall in southern France is beside the point.
That's worse than my jokes, Todd. Come on.
Look, hey, just for the record, guys, you know some of the grocery stores now that let senior citizens in early?
Mm-hmm.
I can get into that line.
See, there's a silver lining everywhere.
By the way, they do with it. There was not, you know, go back in the day, we had, at best, 5 channels on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we had 3 VHF and we had 2 UHF. And one
we
of those UHF channels was an in-and-out channel. And I don't mean just reception quality. It aired sometimes and sometimes it did not. So NASCAR in general didn't own things like it happened to there in rolling up to right there around 2000, it had a freaking crescendo that was freaking amazing. You know, oh, doggone, I'm going to follow it up. He's an announcer now. Jimmy Johnson became his teammate and basically
Jeff
freaking
Gordon?
Kicked his ass.
Jeff Gordon?
Yes. You know, Jeff Gordon was coming on. He was a young guy, you know, the whole good-looking, clean-cut, blah, blah, blah. That was awesome. That was kicking it. And they had that kind of press. But all the old-school press didn't necessarily have that. A. Richard Petty, who built that legend, did it kind of like people that could only watch B movies back in the day and get and become a star from B movies.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that press. They didn't have that kind of exposure.
Right.
And now today, this whole, like you said, that whole social media thing, it is a completely different ball game, gang.
Oh, it for sure
it's,
is. And it's interesting.
It is absolutely different. So the these guys, the whole marketing thing is at a completely different level. Take, you know, I got to watch it from when they had none to when they were huge to when they drop like a freaking rock to social media giving them the exposure. This is kind of cool. It's we're going to see people who can kind of do things because the whole social media thing is definitely a twin-edged razor, which none of you freaking understand anymore either.
I mean, fair enough on that one. And it's interesting you bring it up about the back in the day, there only being like usually five at most, but generally a lot, only three channel options on the TV, because that actually ties into the race we'll be talking about later in the broadcast, because we're bringing out of the vault the 1979 Daytona 500, a race that put NASCAR on the map for that very reason. There was a snowstorm that hit the upper Northeast completely, covered people, got them trapped in their homes. People couldn't go nowhere. And when you only had three channel options to watch and you're stuck at home, a lot of people tuned into NASCAR that day watching the 79 500. And that's what turned a lot of people onto the sport and really helped bolster its popularity as the 70s wore on and it wore on into the 80s and really was the springboard for the NASCAR that we know today. So it's interesting you bring that up.
Okay. So, here was my gateway drug into NASCAR. And all of you will understand that. The local dirt track.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Got it.
And that was well and truly my gateway drug into NASCAR.
Oh, yeah. What's your local short track that you call home?
Let's see. Lorain County Speedway in Lorain County, Ohio. And I will tell you right now, here is, this might be a really weird takeaway about that, but the push cards were what I learned about as far as, so I grew up on the ass end of the muscle car era.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a mate that used to use the old Willys Jeep frames
mm-hmm.
as a push car.
Oh,
and dude,
that's really clever.
He would soup that shit up like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, the push cars had to be good enough to get the hells out of the way. So he was building what is what I think Keith and them are just doing today as far as using these frickin' super-powered four-wheel drive vehicles. He was doing this in the early 70s.
Right.
And that was my gateway drug into NASCAR.
And honestly, there's no better way for any of you fans out there that have never been to your local short track. Trust me, if you live in any state in these continental U.S. states, you have a local short track somewhere near you. I highly recommend Googling it. When this whole pandemic's over, treat yourself to a Saturday night short track racing. There truly is nothing like it. There's truly no closer-knit family, closer-knit group of people out there. The local track in my hometown, Newton, and I'm not even talking about the Iowa Speedway. I'm talking about a little quarter-mile dirt track at just north of the high school. I was the commentator there for 3 years and had some of the best times of my life. Just met some of the most genuine people. And the action doesn't just stop when the track goes quiet and the racing's done for the night. I mean, there'd be nights we'd be there till 3, 4 in the morning just drinking beer, swapping stories, talking about the night's action, talking about racing. And it's some of the most genuine experiences you'll ever have.
Spot on, because it's about, look, there are a ton of guys that are in high-level professional racing at all levels. I don't care if you're talking the endurance racing, Indy, whatever, that started on this kind of stuff. And when you're at that level, everybody is stinking approachable.
Mm-hmm.
If they ain't approachable,
and they ain't worth shit.
I'm going to tell you. You want to talk about a fan, a bang for the buck, the whole event, the whole experience. Again, that's part of the gateway drug thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were there, and it's, you know, they would sit there and they would talk and they would laugh and they would talk about, you know, they'll tell you real things. They will be, here we go. They are still beyond real at this level. They're not, majority of them, they may have some T-shirts and stuff like that. When I say marketing, I'm not talking about that. They got to make a buck. Don't begrudge them for that. But they're not about $5 for an autograph or however much when you start working up. They are there. If you've got one of their T-shirts and a Sharpie, they'll friggin' sign it to hell on the spot, and they'll be happy as hell to do it. That kind
and
of stuff.
It was
stuff.
Just such a good
They are so real. They are so approachable. Yeah, that's, yeah. Don't underestimate that stuff. And bang for the buck, a family function?
Oh, yeah.
You can't beat it.
Especially because a lot of those tracks, the ticket prices are pretty dang reasonable. The track that I worked at, they would let you park a car on the hill and just charge you $10 a car load. So you just, you know, pack your car up full, you get in the gate, and you just spread out the blankets on the hill and just enjoy a good, quiet evening of racing. It's the best ideal Saturday night I can think of, honestly.
Yeah, the hills, bandstands, you name it, or, you know, grandstands, whatever. They call it a grandstand. A lot of them were pretty freaking minimal. A lot of them were like the and I'm not ashamed to say it, but a lot of them were like the visitor side of a football field at a small high school.
Oh,
you know, you know what? You were happy to have a seat sometimes, and you were allowed to take coolers up there in the whole nine. Allowed to take coolers the whole nine yards.
One of my favorite racing memories was a couple years ago, a girl I was dating at the time, her and her family were big into the Knoxville sprint car scene, loved to go see the open wheels any chance they could get, and they were taking me up to see the races in Oskaloosa. And they have these close family friends that literally every year, it's their annual vacation, they save up all their vacation time, they live in Australia, and they fly to the United States in August every year for the Knoxville Nationals. And so I got to meet these crazy people who would come every year just for that event, which I'm like, why would you fly all this way for this event? That's so cool. And we're just sitting around there, we're swapping stories, and this guy comes up and he goes, "Hi, boy, mate, you want to try some paint?" I'm like, "Excuse me?" And he just hands me a paint can mixed of God knows what. And I'll tell you what, it tasted phenomenal, and I got pretty hammered. But that was, it was just one of those random experiences that you can only have at a dirt track, meeting people from another country who were there solely for the pure enjoyment of just being racing. You know, the camaraderie of going out there on the track, meeting the driver. It was just a whole visceral experience. And I'd grown up around racing my entire life, and that there's still, to this day, no experience like that night I had in Oskaloosa, where we just hung out in the infield after the race was over. We went out on the front stretch, got to talk to the driver who won the race, and like literally just stood around in a crowd until 1 or 2 in the morning, just shooting the breeze. It was an unreal experience.
Yes, sir. Because, while you called it unreal, I'm going to tell you because it was real and the people were real.
Well, now I want to find out about this paint, Brady. This sounds awesome.
It was something. I need to find out what he put in that damn can, because to this day I still don't know. But it tastes phenomenal, I'll tell you that much.
All right, are you gonna do me a personal favor as a co-host? Are you gonna do me a personal favor and try to find out what it is?
Oh yeah, I'll shake down some trees and see what I can rustle up for that visit we eventually have.
Why
do I have the feeling this is going to end up like, "Hey y'all, watch this. Hold my beer."
Best stories always.
Well,
I'm
actually going to be hold my paint can.
Well, I don't drink beer, Todd. Now you know that.
I'm just saying it's going to end up like that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just let you think all you want, Brady. I'm gonna turn it back over to you. I'm obviously outclassed here. Okay.
No, you're all good. I mean, those are the main questions I was wanting to get at today,
Todd. Like,
I bring
Todd over, and he just always outdoes me. So keep.
Lord.
We really appreciate you having you on tonight, Todd. But Zach, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this, because you've been around, you know, the track about as long as I have. You've worked on pit crews. You've been over the wall. Do you have any questions for Todd and kind of what he's kind of seen throughout the different decades of the sport?
My biggest one is, you know, he's seen the evolution of the pit stop from them being really slow. For instance, like we said, we're going to be talking about the Daytona 500 from 1979, and a 15-second stop wasn't 4 tires. It was only 2 tires and gas. Todd, my big question is, you know, with the evolution of pit stops, what is one thing that you see that either they would bring back or maybe change up to make it a little cooler and a little more nostalgic, maybe, to put it that way?
Man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer your question correctly, so I'm going to apologize up front.
Well,
but
well,
here's the thing.
It's an opinion base.
Thank you. At least I appreciate you giving me an out up front. So here's the thing. There was no early on, there was definitely not commentary and whatnot wise, like, why I would do a 2-tire stop versus 4-tire stop, stuff like that. And they would talk about, man, that one took a while, stuff like that, and they wouldn't necessarily say why.
Mm-hmm.
So now every stop, you're getting – we know far more. I'm going to say the last 25 years easy, strategy wise, than we knew that prior to it. So the details of a pit stop were far less important. because they were like, they're doing a pit stop. It took them a while. Oh, man, that was a fast pit stop. But we didn't know why. We had no idea on what they were thinking, what the plan was, what was the goal of taking the decision to go two tires versus four, stuff like that. That knowledge is just like, when that stuff started coming out, it was like, I felt ignorant. I was just like, oh, they sucked on that pit stop. And now I'm like, ooh, okay, so they're taking a chance. Or no, they're going for it. They're going to go ahead and add those extra seconds and just try to buy some more time on the track. Mm. You didn't know that before. Does that make sense?
Oh, makes so perfect
basically,
sense.
You really enjoy now that they explain, you know, hey, they took two tires this time because, you know, the left sides are you know, still holding up pretty well, or they elaborate more on why a crew chief made the call for two tires or four tires or no tires and just fuel. That more
I'm with you, because it's not when you say two tires and you touch on something, are we talking left side or are we talking rear?
Right. But that's what I'm...
There is a ton of knowledge we didn't have yesterday.
Exactly. And I think that I'm with you on that, because I do love when they, you know, talk more about that, because it definitely shows that they want to give the information to not just people watching, but spectators or young kids who are wanting to get into this and or get into the business and now understand why they do certain things.
And I'm going to tell you this, somebody that watches, and you always want to give kudos to whoever won first, even if you didn't have a favorite or anything like that. Now you're learning about strategy and stuff like that. My thought is, and here's one of the kind of like really cool things about that, as much as some may say, it's a left turn, it's a left turn, it's a left turn, it's a left turn. Oh, NASCAR fans are morons. Dude, they know so much more about the details of the race, the basic fan base, detail IQ is much higher today than it was in 70.
And honestly, it's that attention to detail what won my girlfriend over to becoming a NASCAR fan, full disclosure, because when I first met her, she wanted nothing to do with the sport. Her parents tried for years to get her to watch a race, and she outright refused. And then she met me, you know, for better or worse, and I started explaining just exactly what we're talking about. I started explaining the strategy breakdown, you know, about how the cars are set up to try and corner different for different tracks, the aero packages, how differing spoilers, differing splitters can all affect it. And the more I explained the nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts, the more it made her go like, wait, so they're not just – okay, hold on one second. They're not just circles here? There's not – okay. And so I'm seeing her studying. She's got a notepad going full law school with it. Just, okay, why did they do that now? It's been great for me because I'm like, wow, I didn't realize this was an angle I could approach, you know, people who don't really pay much attention to the sport, pay no mind to the sport. And it's exactly like you said. It makes you feel more involved in the sport, more invested in the sport. It makes it feel like there's more going on than just simply watching the cars go in circles when you know the ins and outs and know that there's so many little tiny details that are being put into the strategy, being put into the setup of the car. And it's really a good way to kind of win over a modern-day fan.
Okay. And so, you know, you touched on something that made me think. The theory behind the old IROX races.
Oh, the IROX.
Everybody had the same stuff. That was pretty freaking cool.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. Because
I'm just going to put a pause right there for our fans out there listening who aren't familiar with what we're talking about. The IROC series was an acronym for International Race of Champions. And if you've ever heard of an IROC Camaro, that's what we're talking about. It was the spec racing series started, I don't know the exact year, somewhere in the late 80s, and it was an invitational. They'd invite drivers who won NASCAR, either a NASCAR championship or NASCAR drivers, IndyCar drivers, IRL drivers into this series. The cars were all set up by the IROC body, and they were supposed to be, in theory, identical, so it was supposed to be a battle of who was the best champion. So that's where the name International Race of Champions came from. And I'll let you take it away from here, Todd, but I want to make sure our viewers at home knew what we were referring to.
No, great, great. I am glad that you gave the background on that. Dude, I loved the theory of that. I thought that was one of the greatest things because you took people that had, look, IndyCar is definitely not a NASCAR.
Oh, yeah.
Your cats that can go out there and do the 24-hour Le Mans are none of the other two. Although some of them had backgrounds in them, that kind of stuff, all that. It brought all them together, and they had, like, that really common vehicle. And that, to me, I hate it, but that it didn't win. But I thought that was one of the coolest concepts ever, because they had, like you said, they had, everybody had the same baseline, and they had a little bit of margin in how they could tweak it up or down to fit them. That was awesome. I would love to see something like that come back.
And a lot of fans have kind of, you know, pointed to the direction NASCAR has been headed since the early 2000s. It's kind of molding NASCAR to be kind of like the IROC series, where the cars are close as they've ever been. Not quite spec, but, you know, they're super close in how they're assembled, and the rule packages and all the different boxes that the sport puts them in. It's kind of almost got that IROC feel, which honestly brings up something I really wanted to ask you. You mentioned you got out of the sport about 10 years ago. That would have been right at the height of the Car of Tomorrow. Zach, you and I have talked about a lot on this program, that boxy monstrosity on wheels. And the biggest thing that's hurt the sport is the loss of the stock, quote-unquote, identity. And that kind of just got chipped away little by little throughout the 90s to where we got to the point where you left the sport, Taj, in the mid-2000s, late 2000s, right at the turn of the decade. And that's what this Gen 6 car that we have on track now, competing week in and week out, that's what the whole purpose of that car was, to try and bring some stock design elements, not really anything structurally to the car, but, you know, the outside shell of the car, to try and make it look more like a production car. And I want to get your thoughts. Do you think, I mean, obviously they still got a long ways to go, but do you think the cars that we're seeing on track now, that you've seen these first four races, look more like the Mustangs and Camaros that you can buy in the dealership than what was presented to you in the mid-2000s when you left the sport?
Oh yeah, definitely. But the, we discussed this when you guys were on Pop Culture Stars, that NASCAR, the acronym, is really, in my mind, no longer valid, because the old days, you know, the whole reason we had the Superbird and stuff like that, they made enough of those for the streets that they could put them on the damn track, and they were really based on that freaking model and that body and stuff like that. The there was a deal in the late, oh God, I'm going to try to remember where the hell I was stationed to do the math. I think it was on I-9 Houston. So I'm going to say it was pre-2000. The I think the Chevy Lumina was the Chevy vehicle, and the ones
early
on 90s. The track. Yep, and the ones on the track had the they were not notch back, but if you would go to your dealership, they were notch backs, and they were like, oh no, that's no good and stuff like that, because that's not like the stock car, because we have lost the, just a reminder for people listening, the SC and NASCAR was for stock car.
Mm-hmm.
We're a million miles beyond that identity now. I get the safety factors and all that. I'm not faulting it and stuff like that. But we are so far beyond that that, that we kind of got to address the issue. I ain't saying we got to rename it or whatever, but we kind of got to address the issue. The if they were to say, you know what, we're going to use a common body and just, and just say it, and honest and truly use manufacturer stuff within that, and, you know, and kind of try to find a way to market it to bring the stock portion back, that would be okay.
Actually, if
we had
an
extra S for safety stock car, you know, put that extra S up front, safety stock car, I could live with that.
But
does that make sense?
It does make a lot of sense, and it's interesting you bring up that point in particular about it being kind of like a generic body with more manufacturer input, because that's honestly kind of the direction the sport is headed with their quote-unquote NASCAR next-gen car, the car that was supposed to be unveiled for full-time competition next year, but due to COVID has been officially pushed back to 2022. But the idea behind this car is they're going to make, for the first time in the sport, a spec chassis that the manufacturer is going to have some input on the attachments that go on to this spec chassis. And for the first time in a long time, the technology in the cars is going to get an upgrade, because we're honestly, quite frankly, we're racing antiquated, outdated technology. I mean, for God's sakes, we didn't even get electronic fuel injection until 2012, and that had been a mainstay in stock cars for a long-ass time. And so what the whole idea with this next-gen car is they're going to try and bring back some more of those stock elements. You know, they're going to try and do things with the sequential gearbox, with the drive shaft, with even by looking at completely redoing the engine package to make it more closely in line with the technology that automakers are using nowadays to try and make the sport more appealing to maybe bringing in some different manufacturers into the sport, bringing in maybe Dodge back to the sport. And it's kind of interesting you bring that up, because that's where I wanted to get at with this question about the NASCAR next-gen car, is it was kind of supposed to be like a stepping stone to be the bridge from getting us away from that boxy COT car as kind of like a placeholder as they were developing and working on this NASCAR next-gen car. And some of the different things that we're looking at on this, you know, like I said, they're going to have footer, the aerodynamics, everything's going to try and be a little more conducive, a little more input from the manufacturer. Teams are going to have to go back, you know, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, go to the manufacturer to get specified parts. And so while it may not be the same as the 70s and 80s, this NASCAR next-gen car, as right now on paper, seems to be the best chance we've had in a good long while for bringing back exactly what you're talking about, that SC in NASCAR, that stock car element that's been vastly missing from the sport for far too long. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, does that kind of a step that the sport is looking to take in these next 2 years,
Does that sound appealing? Do you feel like that's going to be a good way to maybe try and reach back to that core fan base that I feel like got lost in the shuffle when we became super corporatized? Or what are your kind of thoughts on that?
Man, I think that would be cool if we could kind of like how our conversations merged on the International Race of Champions and all that. And they do that. If they would say, you've got a chassis, and here are your safety requirements that go with it, because, you know, it's going to be far beyond the chassis. And let's say your engine block's got to be between, I don't know, just for instructional purposes, I'm making numbers up, between 300 and 400 cubic inches. You know, and your transmission rules are whatever and all that, and they all got to be based on something that you actually put out on the street. That would freaking kick ass.
Oh, yeah. Some of these different things that are going to be kind of popping up, they're going to have, you know, a split differential kind of suspension setup, similar to what you have in your modern cars. They're even looking at not necessarily adding the hybrid elements right away, but they're designing the car with the intent in mind to, you know, to listen to the manufacturers, listen to the general populace. A lot of manufacturers, I can think of Ford especially, they're really pushing the hybrid technology, the EcoBoost technology, because that's what consumers want. And so NASCAR, while it may be kind of a controversial car, some of the elements they're looking at and bringing into this NASCAR next-gen car are some different hybrid elements. But while it may, you know, garner a lot of, you know, ire from the fans, like, oh, no, it's not my traditional stock car, it kind of is, it, you know, in a way, it will make it more of a stock car than what we have now, because that's the technology that automakers are using now. That's the technology that automakers are experimenting with. So it'll be interesting to see that they're going to try and, you know, bring that in. Also, something that we've talked a lot about on this podcast, and something that's going to be the biggest striking difference visually on the car, is the wheels. I don't know if you've seen any pictures of it, Todd, but Goodyear has politicked and NASCAR has heard them, because Goodyear, they're making right now for NASCAR 15-inch rims with those fat, thick sidewalled tires. They were pretty commonplace back in the 70s and 80s, but if you look at a modern production car, low profile rims, you know, the 18-inch rims, those are more standardized. And so NASCAR, yeah, with Goodyear, they developed this brand new wheel that's going to make it look more like a production wheel. It's got that classic almost five-spoke look that a lot of production vehicles have profile. But the biggest, biggest harp on this new wheel is the fact that due to its construction, it has to go to a single lug hookup system as opposed to the standard five lug nut rule. And so from that perspective, I want to get your thoughts on, do you think the change to try and make the tires look more like a production tire is worth going from the traditional five lug to the one lug? Or do you think, you know, taking that five lug element is counterproductive into trying to bring stock back, and that it's going to hurt the identity of the sport more than trying to bring that stock element of a stock wheel look back?
Well, let me ask you about art imitating life and life imitating art. The what we're seeing on our vehicles, there is a myriad of rim makers and whatnot with all those different options. And it's probably going to come down to a marketing thing. Oh my God, now it's just hurt my head. Boy, gee, thanks. This was supposed to be a damn 5-10 minute spot, and we've been here a while.
I wouldn't be a journalist if I made it fun for you. Now, come on, Todd, give me more credit than that.
don't take it wrong. I don't even know how you tolerated me for an hour. That's beside the point. For sure, supercars like the Indy cars and whatnot, they're single lug routines. We definitely NASCAR side, the SC within that. Me personally, this isn't me personally, so it, my opinion means garbage, and I'm going to give it that. The I would love to still see the five lug routine. It's me. Because
before you expand a little further, I also let you know that on my vehicle. One thing I want
to five lugs. I would like to think that my NASCAR stock car is doing five lugs too.
The one thing with that, are you more concerned about the orchestration of them turning more like an IndyCar pit stop where they're already in position, the car comes in, 1-2 seconds later, the car's out? Or is it just strictly that you're not seeing a driver, the crewman hit the five lugs? And the reason I ask is that as far as we know, the actual orchestration of the pit stop is going to be the same. The crewman have to stay, you know, behind the wall until one pit stop, pit box for their own stall when the driver comes down pit lane, and then they still got to go to the right side first, change those tires to the left. And so I want to clarify with you, are you going to miss the fact that you're not going to see them hit the five lugs, or are you concerned that they're going to take away the traditional orchestration that we've come to know and love how a NASCAR team performs pit service?
Again, I'm going to go back to the lowest common denominator. If I got to change a tire on my car, if I'm doing five lugs, I want to see you do five lugs.
Fair enough.
I'm a lowest common denominator kind of guy.
That's fair. Well, we're about 10:30 now, so we got about a half hour left in the podcast. Fellas, we kind of want to save the 79500 for next week, because I kind of want to ask Todd a few more questions, and there's still some local headlines, some new stories that we can get to also to talk about, because there's plenty of racing this week, but I kind of want to get y'all's feel on that.
I'm down.
All righty.
I'm here. You know, tell me when you want to kick me off the show, and I'll walk away.
No, I've really been enjoying this because it's too long. I've been surrounding myself with a lot of like-minded NASCAR fans, and I've never gotten a chance to ask a fan like yourself that left the sport right when, you know, arguably so, it was at its lowest point. It's really special for me to get this perspective because these are questions I've wanted to ask for a good long while. I'm glad I finally have someone I can ask these questions to and get this perspective on, so I'm glad to join us on the show for that reason.
Look, guys, I think it's awesome. I'm grateful that you shared the time with me. Dr. John brought us all together to give our guys some love here, too. You guys jumped in and pop culture stars. So, look, guys, thank you for bringing love to our shows, too.
Of course, we had a great time on Pop Culture Stars, and we'd definitely happily do it again.
Yeah.
Oh man, you know what? This is on air. It's being recorded. You don't even know what you just opened yourself up to.
Oh no, I have a tendency of doing that. But one other thing, I kind of want to get your perspective on, Todd. Kind of bringing it more towards what we're seeing right now with the COVID outbreak and some of the different ways we're finding ways to entertain ourselves. Have you caught any of the virtual races that have been put on? And if you have, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's something that is good for the sport? Do you think it's a way that they can build their base? Or do you think it's kind of silly? Or what are your thoughts on the whole iRacing craze that has kind of taken hold while we're all kind of holed up in our homes here?
Boy, I'm going to try to extend your answer. Because my answer is nope, I ain't caught none of that stuff. But what I am going to tell you is, and I do not have it here, just in case you guys don't know my situation, I am living separate from my family up here in Indiana doing a job.
Mm-hmm.
And here is one of my favorite things that I did. I used to do when I was back home with my family is my son, when he upgraded his Xbox, gave me his old one, and he had one of the old racing games. The old Forza, I think it was version 4.
Forza 4,
and,
oh, that's a good one.
Solid game.
And he got me the DLC with it, right, the downloadable content.
Mm-hmm.
So it got me all the old muscle cars. So what I used to do, and I know this really doesn't answer your question, because I haven't watched any of your things, but this is as close as I can get to the answering the virtual racing thing, is I would get hammered, jump into a Hemi Cuda, and go racing.
Right.
That's the best answer I got for you. I would get into that, and that was the thing. So that's as close as I got to drinking and driving, but, oh, yeah, I would definitely do some drinking and driving on that one. The biggest issue I had was I didn't necessarily dig a soundtrack, but I would pull stuff up, and, you know, I was like, how do I want to listen to something that I want to hear while doing the racing thing?
Fair enough, my dear.
It was funny. Yeah. Every now and then, I would hear a tune that I dug, but yeah.
That's fair enough.
Seriously, here's a weird thing. Let me throw this out here. Certain tracks, when playing that game, I would want to hear a particular song. I can't remember the track in particular by name, but man, if I did not want to hear Robert Plant's Magic Nirvana or the song Nirvana from the Magic Nirvana album on that particular track, because that was just the song that fit the race.
And that's definitely the fun thing about doing online racing is exactly that. It's a lot more laid back. You can set different musics to it. You can get in an online chat like we're seeing with the drivers right now. They're in online chats during the race, trading barbs back and forth. Like the race that they had tonight, they had a virtual race at Myrtle Beach Speedway there, Dr. John. And we were having the drivers go back and forth, and they were giving each other, you know, hard jabs about their pit strategy or about, you know, bumping into each other. Like, for example, Ryan Preece had the pole in the first race and immediately dropped to the back of the pack, kind of saved his tires. And as soon as he dropped the back of the pack, Dale Jr. quips on and goes, "Oh, Ryan Preece, you okay? Did you fall out of your office chair there?" You know? And it's that laid back atmosphere that's been kind of endearing almost and really a whole new perspective because you get to see these drivers doing their thing, but in the weirdest, most relatable circumstances, you know, to what we have nowadays, because almost every kid has an Xbox or a PC game of some sort that they can game on. So it's kind of a unique way for them to engage with their modern fans.
Oh, you know what? That's something we touched on earlier. So now this is a whole nother thing. So those cats, so it doesn't matter. We'll use me, the old school guy, because I would do some of those odds and ends challenges in the Forza, and play with cats and would be online, and we would engage, and I would always try to be civil. That's kind of cool because if you could do, and I'm going to assume it's like the equivalent of the challenges in the old Forza. That would be kind of freaking fun because you never know who the hell's on there, apparently.
Exactly.
You may have somebody that is a pro behind the wheel, but you know when you're on the control pad, it's a whole new game.
Exactly. And kind of taking a segue away from the virtual world, today is actually kind of an unofficial holiday, and we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking about the changing of the guard. You brought up a particular name I want to get to and get everyone in the group's kind of thoughts on it. But today being April 8th, 4-8, coincidentally, we decided to call today National Jimmy Johnson Day. I don't know if it's an official holiday, but it's official in my book. So I want to wish y'all a happy Jimmy Johnson Day, and I kind of want to go around the group, and I want to talk about the 7-time champion. Todd, you were there for the early parts of his career. Zach, you and I, we've kind of been there for pretty much the bulk of his career. John, I don't know if you've been able to catch any of the highlights, but I want to kind of go around and see if anyone has everyone share their favorite Jimmy Johnson stories in memory of, in honor of Jimmy Johnson Day that we found ourselves on today. And we'll start with you, Todd.
Oh, okay. I'll go with this. You know, you got Jeff Gordon, and he's kicking ass, taking names, peak of his career, and the team gets on the sky, and I could be wrong, but Jeff Gordon endorsed this guy to come in there, and I don't think he even knew what the heck he endorsed.
Oh, he said that multiple times. He's like, I made a mistake.
I made a good mistake.
This dude was going to get on somewhere. The irony was the whole same team routine. And you have a guy that is out there kicking ass, taking names, and theoretically brought on his heir apparent. And that heir apparent came on the scene or took that role quicker than he was planning. And you watch the heat and stuff like that grow on. Jimmy was still having the nerve, and I think, I don't want this to sound negative, but I think Jeff had lost some of the edge. I think he had the will, but he didn't have the edge, if that makes sense.
Makes sense.
Jimmy was right there, and it was just, that was, dude, you had, you know what? The closest thing I could compare that to is watching pro football and seeing somebody like Joe Montana being a son, followed by old boy, what's his name, Young, that followed him, or go to Green Bay, and they're changing QBs. It's kind of the same thing. It's you do not often have somebody of that caliber following somebody of the same caliber. Mm-hmm. Is that? Are you guys following me?
Oh, I'm following you.
That was, it was one of those rare followings.
I got you. And it's definitely been really special to watch it go from that just, hey, this kid's pretty cool, let's sign him to the dynasty that we've seen grow before our eyes. And it's a really interesting perspective you brought on that, Todd. And I'm going to turn it over now to Zach. Zach, do you have a favorite Jimmy memory that sticks out over these last few years?
One of them for me is always his domination at tracks, and that's something that can be said at a lot of tracks. And one of them to me is Las Vegas. And the reason I say that is I actually was there when he won one of his several races at Las Vegas. He won there four times, it looks like. And I was there for his third one, Las Vegas 2007. I have a lot of family. I've said this on the broadcast. I have a lot of family out in Vegas. So oftentimes we would go out to Vegas for races. And it was I believe it was me, my mom, and my brother Nathan went out to Las Vegas to watch the race. And boy, howdy, I think he even won me some money. I can't remember, but just being there, being up in the grandstand, watching the race, and camping out too, which is a big thing. You know, being in the I wasn't on the infield. I was on one of the other smaller tracks they use for camping out there. But having the opportunity to see him get one of his wins, you know, just being out at Las Vegas in the desert, it being cold for some reason, it was a lot of fun, and that's always one that sticks out to me.
Oh, I'm definitely jealous. You got to see a Jimmy win in person, because that's something I cannot say personally. So definitely jealous of you there. Dr. John, you kind of are getting thrown into the racing world the longer you get to know Zach and I. Kind of in your life experience, have you really heard the name Johnson a lot? And do you have any memories that stick out about Jimmy Johnson? Did we lose Dr.
John?
John,
are you on mute?
Did he fall asleep?
He might have.
Oh, I'm sorry. My little button accidentally put me on mute. Can you hear me now?
Oh, we got you, John.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
my experience.
I'm glad I went with mute first.
That's all right. So let me tell you a little bit about my experience. I'm responsible for 3 days. Number one is Shoeless Joe Jackson Day, which I got established in South Carolina with the state legislature. I run Bigfoot Day, which is the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. And I run Lizard Man Day because I run the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival. And if you're really serious about Jimmy Johnson Day, we'll talk. We can make it happen. I know how to do it. I've done it 3 times. So, you know, fourth time is past the charm, you know. Fourth time's pretty damn easy. And I think it would be great. All of a sudden, you hit one of my areas of expertise. And I love this kind of stuff. I love honoring people for great things that they have done. So I will leave this conversation as follows. I'm going to give you a call. If you want to do it, let's do it. How's that?
I'll actually hit you up on that because I feel like that'd be something that we could all get behind. Because
Done it before,
really,
and I'll do it again. And I love it. You see, it's great to honor people who have done something exceptional. So there you go.
And the thing that really stands out to me about Johnson, that really is what solidifies his name right next to Richard Petty and right next to Dale Earnhardt, it's not the 83 wins. It's not the 7 championships, the multiple crown jewel events that are tied to his name. It's the person that he is. If you think about Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt, the reason they had such a big fan base and the reason that it was so loved is because, for Richard Petty's case, if you would see him at the local supermarket or see him at the track or see him at a restaurant and you said, "Hey, Richard, I'm a big fan of yours," he would stop and he would sign, and it wouldn't just be some little squiggle. It would be a full calligraphy, beautiful Richard Petty signature. You know,
Yes, sir.
And that really stood out to fans. And then you get to the 80s, Dale Earnhardt takes on the scene. And in a world where you got, you know, a bunch of people kind of doing different things, you got the pretty boys and all that, here comes this good old American, you know, man who just goes out, hunts and fishes. And he has 7 championships to his name, but he's still out there working on the family farm, you know, baling hay, bulldozing, all that things. And that genuineness about Earnhardt is what made him so appealing to fans. And I think with Jimmy, he captures both sides of Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt beautifully. He's got, you know, the charisma and just the kind-hearted nature of Richard Petty, but he's got that down-to-earth relatableness that Dale Earnhardt had. And that, to me, is what's always going to stand out in my memory about Jimmy Johnson and thinking back about his career, especially for me, because I was growing up I was born in 93, so going through the 2000s, watching Jimmy Johnson watching Johnson rise to, you know, being the guy that he is and seeing that dynasty happen was during my adolescence, was during, you know, that really pivotal time in my life. And to be able to grow up with a champion like Jimmy Johnson representing my favorite sport, to have that role model being at the top of the sport that I would tune into week in and week out, I count myself as very lucky that I had a guy like Jimmy Johnson to be that role model for me when I was 8 or 9 years old, to show that how to be a gracious winner, to not only be good at what you do, but to be humble about it, to give respect to the people that brought you there, you know, to not get a big head. And that is the legacy that I will always remember fondly about Jimmy Johnson. And that is what I will always be grateful for about his legacy, is that he was not just a champion on the track, but he was more than a champion. He was definitely a superhero off the track. And if I had to put one memory that really kind of encapsulates that kind of mythos that Jimmy kind of almost became in my small, childhood mind, is being larger than life, is when he won at Fontana, California in 2016, driving the Superman car. It was that afternoon. I was like, okay, this is it. Johnson is Superman. I didn't think he exists in this world, but that's it. He's our Clark Kent Superman, I guess. So, but no, that is the one memory that's always going to stand out to me about our 7-time champion, is just the role model that he was and just how gracious and humble he's been through all the accomplishments and where he's gotten to today.
It's so funny that you mentioned Superstar and that you mentioned Superman, because, I've run 30 Comic-Cons. I know how to honor heroes. So we'll talk.
We'll definitely have to talk.
Absolutely.
Dude, seriously, I'm still trying to get past you being born in 93, Matt. I got kids older than you. Oh, Lord.
See, you're talking about Jeff Gordon's rise in the 90s. That was really before I could really comprehend what was going on the TV. But I'm going to throw a name out for you, Todd, and see if you remember this. When I came into the sport in the late 90s, My older siblings, they were big Jeff Gordon fans, and being the younger sibling, I was like, I don't want to cheer for the same guy you did, so I didn't. I wasn't a Gordon fan. But then my parents, they were big Earnhardt fans, and myself, big Earnhardt fan. But when I was first a kid, picking my driver, I was like, well, I don't want to pick my dad's favorite driver. That's a cop out. So my favorite driver when I got into the sport was a man by named Kenny Schrader. Does that name ring a bell to you, Todd?
Yes, it does.
And honestly, the more stories I hear about Ken Schrader, he kind of encapsulates what we were talking about earlier, that short track feel, because he's got stories upon stories of doing exactly like what we talked about earlier in the show, going to short tracks, racing on the dirt, and then just closing down the track till 3 or 4 in the morning, drinking beer on the front stretch. And he still does that in his 60s. And so I don't know what it was that drew me to him when I was a kid, but I'm like, man, I picked a really badass driver to be my favorite driver, and I didn't even know it.
That's pretty cool. You talk about that in 93. I was leaving Japan back in that day. Dude, that's a whole nother set of stories that you just opened up. Oh, Lord.
We're definitely going to get some of those stories. I feel like we got to have him back, fellas.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I can have him back. I'll just say, Todd, let's go on the Charlotte line, and he'll say sure, because I know, Todd, I'm guessing, because I'm a psychic, you've had a good time tonight, right?
I had the best time tonight, but do you want to know why I was able to hang out all night tonight? Because I still got no stinking power.
That's right.
I sent a text to my mates. The gang, just so you know, generically speaking, I wake up at 3:45 every morning.
Oof.
So this is an anomaly to be able to hang out here. But you know what? I am so grateful that you have kept me all night and not kicked me off. That is awesome. I've been happy to be here.
We're never going to kick you off.
I am able to do it, I'll do it.
Well, thank you. We're glad to have you. And I guess, it's about that damn time. I hate to say it. So as Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling, said, let's get our plugs in and we'll get on down the road until next week. So we're going to go in the following order. Zach, what have you got to plug coming up? Todd, what have you got to plug? And Zach and Brady, what you got to plug? So, Zach, what have you got to plug tonight through the next week or whatever?
Well, so next week is Easter. There is no NASCAR race, but we will talk about the Daytona 500 of 1979, so make sure to watch that. And you can get caught up on the e-NASCAR race that happened this past weekend at Bristol, so you can watch that because we will talk about that next week. Also, I will be back in Illinois in July if anyone wants to meet up somewhere.
That's frightening. Okay. We're so glad you are. That's where you're from, and all your best friends in the world are there. So we hope you have a great time, and keep reminding us about that so that you'll build up a fan base to come hang out with you. So that's great. So thank you. Thank you, Zach. It's great. Todd Saxon, one of my buddies from Pop Culture Stars, love you on that show. And so what have you got to plug or say or whatever?
I'm going to plug the Charlotte line. Who'd have thought that a request for a 10-minute spot would have gone an hour and a half? Guys, that you ain't kicking me out. Love you. Had a friggin' great time tonight. On the all.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. Brady, what you got?
Well, like Zach said, there's no Richmond action this week, and that's going to be next weekend because we're taking the weekend off from iRacing to observe the Easter holiday. But that doesn't mean there's not any racing action to tune into. Right now, I kind of alluded to it earlier, we're in the middle of the Short Track Challenge. It's this iRacing event that's being put on by NBC Sports Network. And on the last 3 days, they've gone to these iconic short tracks that NASCAR hasn't gone to in a while as kind of a way to bring back some recognition to them. On Monday, they were at Rockingham. A race that was dominated by William Byron, locking him into the championship show tomorrow. Yesterday we were at Lucas Oil Raceway, which saw Christopher Bell win his way in, and I can't remember who the other driver was. I'll have to look that up. And then tonight we were at Myrtle Beach, which saw Ryan Preece and Landon Castle win their way into the championship race tomorrow. And that championship race I'm referring to is going to take place at the virtual Martinsville Speedway. It's going to be a thrilling short track night. I mean, if you've seen any racing action at Martinsville, you know it's going to be guaranteed fun. So make sure you tune into that. That'll be tomorrow on NBC Sports Network. Also this weekend, it's not NASCAR related, but IndyCar has kind of taken on the iRacing, you know, bandwagon that NASCAR started, and they're starting to put on some different events, and they're going to be hosting an IndyCar race Saturday night, and kind of alluring to a lot of NASCAR fans out there. Joining the entry list is none other than Dale Earnhardt Jr. He's going to be getting behind the wheel of a virtual Indy car for the first time and going to shake down some rough laps in the nationwide number three. So if you're a fan of Earnhardt Jr. or just want to see some racing, make sure you tune into that on Saturday night. And then, like Zach said, come next Tuesday, we'll be discussing the 79 500. And if you've not seen that race before in your life, what are you doing? It's one of the most iconic moments in the sport, and I've gone back and watched it multiple times, and that race was one of the most exciting races I've ever seen. You know, and I grew up with three wide racing being the norm and packs three wide, five deep, you know, and there was nothing that I've seen in my time watching racing that came close to the action that you're going to see in the 79 500. So definitely tune into that, because you'll want to be part of that conversation next Tuesday.
Well, thanks a lot. And I'll tell you what my plug is for is that Dale Earnhardt played runner in the Hardee's biscuit commercials for 2 years and propelled Hardee's to superstardom. On Saturday morning, you couldn't get around that fast food restaurant to get biscuits and gravy or whatever, thanks to Dale Earnhardt. So look, thanks everybody. The only bad news is it's quitting time. You know what they say, it's quitting time, but we'll see you next week on the Charlotte Line. And thanks to our guest, Todd. We really appreciate you, Todd Saxon. So take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.